well.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. My name is Raina Starr. Desperate House Witches is not a GPG or even an R-rated show, so if bad language, bodily functions, or anything else I might say might offend you, this may not be the show for you. But I think this is actually going to be a show for everybody because I have the amazing author Joe Graham on for the hour for this Election Day special. Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the incredible Wicked One herself, the amazing Dorothy Morrison. Check out Wicked Witch Studios at www.wickedwitchstudios.com for all of your witchy needs. And if you need that stuff shipped overseas, check out theangrycauldron.com. Okay, we're getting straight into it. My guest for the hour is the amazing Joe Graham. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Raina. How are you?
Stressed, scared, worried, nervous. For folks who don't know, Joe is the author of The Great Wheel, fantastic book, and The Great Wheel Winter. We're going to talk about both of these books. We're going to talk about how amazingly predictive Joe has been through these books. And let's get into it. So, Joe, I got to ask you, what is your feeling today? Did you have any issues at the polls? What's happening in your neck of the woods?
Well, first of all, I voted a week ago. So, no, I haven't been to the polls today.
Okay.
When I voted, there was no problem at all. What is my feeling? There is a great hush, an enormous stillness. And I was saying to someone earlier, you know, when you're at the beach and you're playing around in the water and maybe you're getting out a little bit deep, and then there comes a big wave. And you see this wave coming, and nothing you can do at that point. And as it breaks over your head, your feet leave the sand, and you are just suspended. And if you open your eyes, all you see is green water. You can't tell where you are. You can't see how far you are from the beach. You can't see where anyone with you is. All you can do is just be suspended in Mother Ocean. And that's the moment we're in today. We are in the wave. And the only thing we can do is just be in the wave. And we'll come bobbing to the surface in a minute. We will. And at some point in the next, you know, little time, right? Because, you know, the worst thing you can do when you're at the beach and that happens is start panicking, right? That's the worst thing you can do. What you need to do is just be suspended, and you will come up because the wave is going to go on in. And that's where we are right now, is that moment of hush when we're inside the wave.
You know, that just took my stress level down by 10 because I have been way up on 100 for like a week now. We voted 2 weeks ago when early voting first started. We went the absolute first day because if something were to have gone wrong, I wanted to make sure I had plenty of days after just in case. So our family made a huge plan. Because we vote in different locations, different members of the family vote in different locations. We don't all live together. So we went to one spot, and I packed a go box. I mean, you're talking about overpacking. I packed drinks, snacks, chairs. I packed towels. I packed toilet paper, Joe. I brought books. I brought absolute wet naps, paper towels. I was going to be, I brought charger, two cell phones. I was not going to lose contact. I was going to maintain my hydration. I did not know how long the lines were going to be. I was going to be fully, fully prepared. In the meantime, it took one of us an hour. It took another one of us an hour and a half. And those were the longest wait times for all four of us. Like, one person went to one place, I went to another place, somebody went to another place, my other son went to another place. We all had very similar experiences, that it was moving, it was quick, relatively speaking. We were prepared for it to be worse, but because we had a plan, we were all pleasantly surprised. So I just want to encourage folks.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it was great, but it was busy, but it was great.
It was steady, and it was about 25 minutes for me, and it was very steady, but they were moving through very efficiently. And, you know, you and I are in the same state in North Carolina, and I think the North Carolina State Board of Elections really deserves kudos, because I think in general they have done a very good job of managing the enormous turnout that we're having. As we speak, my sister is being a poll volunteer in Durham. I think they've done a great job of, you know, trying to manage this, and that's not perfect, and there are some places where there have been problems, but I think in general, given the population and the enthusiasm to vote this year, they've done a great job.
I have to agree. Everybody that I dealt with, and I dealt in an area that had some Republicans for one of us who was voting, but everybody was very polite. There were no problems that I witnessed firsthand, so I was very happy about that. Of course, you know, I'm one woman with three men, so it's not like I'm in any danger, so to speak, because nobody would leave me alone because I'm the little mommy, you know, that everybody in my family protects. So, and it's very sweet, and I'm very lucky to have children who love me, you know. So that was a very nice thing. But we were prepared. I mean, you know, we've heard a lot of things that the current occupant of the White House has been saying. And, you know, we live in a state where there is a goodly amount of folks who feel as he does. And, you know, that can be a tricky situation. So we were just, you know, we were just all on lookout patiently for each other. And again, it was very well done. And, you know, the folks in Charlotte are amazing. We were very lucky. The lines moved beautifully, very, very well. And everybody was pretty much keeping their cool, because I think we all recognize, you know, that everything is on the line. And I know we say that every single election, that it's the most important election of our lifetime. But the fact is, every election is the most important election of our lifetime. And I wish people would take that more to heart.
Well, I think this actually is. I mean, taking it back the Great Wheel, about every 80 years, we have a sea change. We have a major inflection point in our nation's history. And this is one of those points. And so, you know, to illustrate that for people who haven't read the book, okay, it's 2020. Count back 80 years. Where are you?
Yep.
Where are you? You're in 1940. You're on the eve of World War II.
Yep.
The war has already begun in Europe. The United States is torn. Are we going to get in? Are we not going to get in? There are riots in the streets that are both pro-communist and pro-fascist. There's a plot to assassinate President Roosevelt by an American fascist group. I mean, this is an inflection point. Count back another 80 years. Where are we? 1860, the beginning of the Civil War, the election that begins the Civil War. Count back 83 years, 84 years, and we're to 1776. We're to the Declaration of Independence, the American Revolution. Go back another 80 years, roughly, and we're to the Salem witch trials and all of the conflicts about whether America is going to be a theocracy or not. And so every 80 years, we hit one of those points. And that's where we are now. It's not unexpected. It's not unpredictable. But it is critical.
Yes. Very much so. And I, you know, I was looking at, because you didn't obviously write this book a few months ago. This book has been, as you know, you wrote it. It had to be edited, I'm sure. It had to be published and released. And I'm looking, I mean, I'm already like in the Great Wheel Winter, and I'm looking at the season of In Bulk 2020. See, folks, this is why you've got to get these books so you know what I'm talking about. But you show that In Bulk 2020 is the line between winter, midwinter, spring equinox, where things are still shifting. However, we are now in crisis era, moving towards, I don't know what we're moving towards. So what I want us to kind of discuss is, okay, so you were able to identify in advance where we would be right now, which is astounding to me. So where are we going?
Where are we going? The next about 5 years is the crisis era, and that is until about 2025. Historically, these crises take about 4 to 5 years to resolve. And astrologically, that is what we see when you look at, for example, the recent work of Ivo Domingos. I mean, he is showing, you know, a series of challenges to the, and aspects to the birth chart of the United States running through February 17th, 2025. And so, you know, he's gotten to this by a different path, but he's gotten to a lot of the same conclusions. And when we talk about tower time and these other metaphors that people have been using, you know, these are different ways of coming at the same truth. And so I would say, you know, what we're looking at is several phases of this crisis. And right now, where we are at the end of the beginning. And I'm paraphrasing Winston Churchill in 1940 when he said, we are not at the beginning of the end. We are at the end of the beginning. This 2020, the pandemic, the era of Trump's presidency here has been the beginning of the crisis. And so now we're going into the next phase. And the next phase is going to be very challenging. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that no matter what happens today, a Biden win would not mean by any stretch the end of what we're currently going through.
No. No, I mean, certainly a Biden win is the best outcome. And a Biden landslide is the best possible outcome. But that's not going to be the end of it. The challenges that we face and the deep divisions in our nation are not going to be healed by a Biden win. And I say healed, and if you read through Winter, one of the things I talk about toward the end is how do you reestablish civil society at the end of it? How do you invite concordia? How do you reconcile after this is done? And, you know, that is one of the difficult things coming out of a crisis era, and done badly, what it does is leave wounds and scars that fester through the next 80 years. Already today, I was seeing an article on a major newspaper, someone who was saying that, you know, if we win, what we need to do is punish them. And I thought, you know,
because people who have... I'm sorry, I was just going to say that retribution seems to be the thought process of the day, and I understand where it's coming from, because when people attack each other, and they lose sight of how it even started to begin with, you don't heal those wounds very easily. And when you have someone who's already threatened violence in the streets if they don't win, you know, there's no happy place to go there. They, you know, the door is already closed to peace. Retribution does not bring about peace. I understand why retribution is such a tasty feeling, but it doesn't heal a nation. And it doesn't get people the things they need to live. And this is the pandemic isn't stopping just in, you know, if you think that the pandemic is going to stop with a new president, it's not. There's going to be, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the pandemic is going to be at least another year at the levels that it currently is rising at. What, do you agree with that?
I don't know if it will be a year, but I think it will certainly be at least 6 months, and it may be a full year.
Okay.
I think that depends on, you know, the medical advances, and that's not really terribly predictable. But I think we're certainly in for at least another 6 months through next spring, and possibly another full year. But I guess, and this is one of the points I make in winter about invoking Concordia, is the difference between punishment, between crimes and mistakes, right? If someone deliberately commits a crime, and in this administration has deliberately committed crimes, yes, they should face justice. But someone who has made a mistake, who has believed a lie that someone told them, believing a lie someone tells you is not a crime, it's a mistake.
Correct.
And, you know, as a parent, let's say your child makes a mistake that causes you heartache and trouble and making you stay up at night crying over it. Do you want to punish them, or do you want them to never do that again?
Of course, you never want them to do it again. Sure.
What I want from my daughter is not for her to, you know, be punished. I want her to stop this stupid thing. I want her to understand why this was a bad mistake and that she should never do it again. I don't want her to suffer. When we move into the rhetoric of revenge, we want, and I saw someone saying this on Twitter today, I want every Trump voter to suffer. And I'm like, no. We're better than that. We must be better than that.
We have to try to be better than that. Because I don't feel, see, here's the difference, though. When you're talking about your child, you're talking about someone you love. The point where it breaks is that you expect, first of all, you expect other adults to know better, therefore do better. Because you want everyone to see, I mean, and it's partially a selfish, don't you see everything the way I see it type of thing. But the fact of the matter is that you're only going to breed more destruction and more harm. You know, I'm sure you saw the photos where the trucks were surrounding the Biden bus. That was dangerous, not just for the people
on
the bus, but for the people doing it, for the people chasing the bus. They could have been killed. You know, a bus doesn't stop at the same rate or at the same, it's not even the same braking system as a pickup truck. You know, people could have been killed accidentally. And then what? What do you do when someone dies? And you had a hand in it. Do you celebrate, or does some of your humanity actually go away? And I think that no matter what, no matter who you are, no matter what the circumstances, when you injure another person, I think when you do it, you'll lose part of your humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
that's a problem.
Just,
you know.
You know, we have mechanisms for that. The charge is reckless driving. We have that charge. You know, we don't need to come up with a new means of revenge. We charge people who drive recklessly with reckless driving.
Yeah.
And that's justice, but not revenge.
Justice doesn't always work. You know, I mean, if you take it into other realms, you know, when, you know, police brutality is never kept in check or very rarely kept in check, people get angry. So what can we do to try to keep that anger in check when something horrific or an injustice is being committed that you don't see that the ends don't justify the means? In essence, you're not being corrected or punished in such a way that the law has done its due diligence, where it is unfair. How do you reconcile that in yourself?
I think across the board, we need to make our systems work again. That so many of our institutions are failing people. And it's not that the idea of the institution is wrong. It's that it is no longer working as it should. And we need to fix our institutions. But we need to think very carefully about throwing out our institutions. You know, as a parent, I say, my daughter's school is not working very well for her in remote learning. Do I say, well, what we should do is throw out the idea of public schools?
Oh, not at all.
No. What we need to do is make our schools work better, not throw out the idea of public education. So, I empathize strongly as a queer person with frustration with unjust institutions. But at the same time, I think we need to think very carefully about throwing out the institutions rather than about reforming the institutions. Does that make sense?
Of course. And I think what happens is that people lose sight of what the cause and effect are or can be of certain actions. I think, you know, there's always a visceral, immediate, knee-jerk reaction that wants to fix it immediately or permanently. But if you do that, there is a ripple effect that affects everything else around it and in ways that you may not have planned for.
Exactly.
You know?
And we can draw lessons about that from the cycle in the Great Wheel. For example, and this is one example I talk about briefly in the book, in 1940, one of the American fascists wrote this incredibly offensive article saying that the Jews of Baltimore needed to be locked up in a ghetto like the Warsaw Ghetto. Terribly offensive, anti-Semitic, horrible. And so the response of a Democratic congressman dies, was that there should be a congressional committee to investigate this kind of hate speech and be able to arrest people for saying these things. The Dies Committee was the original name of it, but it is better known as the House Un-American Activities Committee. Because 10 years later, under Joe McCarthy, this was anyone who was presumed to be a communist or knew someone who was a communist or who had once read a socialist paper, and people lost their lives, their livelihoods, their careers, their children because they were communists and they'd been caught by the House Un-American Activities Committee. And what Congressman Dies meant, he meant very well. He was trying to fight this horrible, offensive hate speech. But what he did was create something that was used to harm thousands and thousands of people because of the ideas they read about. And so we need to be really careful when we start wielding that sword of justice that we are not creating monsters.
And it just seems like that's what we do naturally. And it's so disheartening sometimes. And listen, I'm guilty of it. I'm the first to admit I have a flash anger. I get really pissed off really quickly, especially when I see somebody harmed, you know. But, you know, everything is through a personal lens. I don't necessarily know what kind of karma or what kind of backstory. A lot of us hear an immediate story, something that happened 5 minutes ago, and we don't really know all the facts. We make a decision based on immediate detail, which is not complete, and we fly all over the place. And I'm frightened by mob mentality, and I see so much of it on social media, and I find it really kind of scary.
Yes, it is. And it is. It's terribly scary. And I'm sure, you know, we've seen it in pagan circles. I've certainly seen it in fandom circles. It's not always about politics. Somebody gets the idea that a particular, you know, fanish pairing is evil, and suddenly people are being attacked and ostracized and just run off out of town on a rail because they don't like a particular pairing or they do like a particular pairing. And social media feeds that mob mentality because you can do it without seeing the other person. You don't see the harm you do. And, you know, on one occasion I said to, when people were dogpiling someone about this, I said, now, if you saw 50 adult women standing around a crying 16-year-old girl in a parking lot and shrieking at her, would you be comfortable with that?
No, of course not.
Because that's what's happening. The person who has offended by saying the wrong thing is a 16-year-old girl. And these are adult women in their 30s screaming at her.
Oh, yeah.
We would never find this acceptable in real life.
No, not when you're face-to-face, but we do online. And it's absolutely crazy. And, you know, a lot of people, and I'm not really a fan of jingoistic words. You know, it seems like every generation has a new entry into the language. But the fact of the matter is that cancel culture is a real thing. You know, we want to immediately, it's like we're a pack of antibodies and a foreign thing has like come into our midst and we don't know what it is. And we assume it's foe instead of friend. So we want to eliminate it. And it's really fucked up. I'm sorry. There's no other way to put
it.
It
really is. It really is.
You know,
I feel like that as we go further into the last phase of winter, about 3 to 4 years from now, and then into spring, what we're going to see, I think, is orthodoxy. And that whether that is orthodoxy coming from the right or coming from the left, it's a phase in which we are socially norming and where, you know, that cancel culture mentality, in some ways, it's getting rid of real problems. In some ways, it's exposing predators. But where this always goes, whether it's high Victorianism or whether it's the 1950s, is conformity. Is people need to think and believe and feel a certain way. And just to give you an example, for example, from fandom and from romance writing. One of the things which is now terrible is age difference.
Ooh.
And suddenly, this is horrible and abusive. And so if your female lead in a story is 20 and your male lead is 25, this is obviously abusive. And I just look at this, hearing younger women say this, and I'm like, what in the world? But this is one of the, it's grooming behavior for an older man to be interested in the younger woman, even if it's a 5-year age difference. And I'm like, you know, on one level, you know, we're talking about, you know, ending the ability of sexual predators to prey on people, but we're carrying it too far. And we always carry, you know, in this era, we always start carrying stuff too far. And that's one of the cautions for about, you know, 2030, about 10 years from now, is where do we see the orthodoxy carried too far?
Oh, no. And I just feel like, you know, when I observe the Republican stand on several issues, abortion, same-sex marriage, which is just marriage if you ask me, but nobody cares about my opinion. But anyway, you know, it feels like they are forcing or trying to force a reset to the 50s.
Well, I think that is very much the case, and I think, but I think we need to be careful, too, of over-orthodoxy on the left. You know, it's easy to see that somebody else's house is on fire, but it's harder to see when your house is on fire, and at the same time, it is a lot easier to see them.
Because I know you know better than I do.
Well, no, I mean, I think a lot of this is, you know, it's very instinctual. For example, how many times have you seen recently in the pagan community someone blasting someone else for not doing it right?
Always. What time is it?
Yeah, you know, trying to create an orthodoxy rather than say, you know, one group chooses to do it one way and another group chooses to do another way. Nobody's making anybody do a particular thing. And if person A wants to do it that way and their group is okay with that, fine. You know, it's not anybody else's problem. And I feel like that is one of the issues. And I have noticed that in-house spats in the pagan community and the Fanish community and every community is right now is this desire to somehow create an acceptable orthodoxy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every group should adhere to this principle. And what I think is every group should adhere to principles that they consent to. Because these are relationships, and what different people consent to is personal. If you want a group that, you know, meets skyclad and somebody else wants a group that doesn't, that is a matter of your personal consent. Not, oh, this is the way it should be. At least that's how I feel about it.
No, I agree. That's why we have different groups. However, when you go from one group to another and you're judging another group, that's where the problem lies. I mean, you're allowed to have any kind of you're allowed to have any kind of group you want. I mean, if you want to have a group that exclusively meets with people with purple hair, that's your group for people with purple hair. That's fine.
Yep.
You know, it's not a group I need to be in. It's not a group I was invited into. I, you know, it's maybe if I ever decided I wanted to have purple hair, I might be invited to that group. That's fine. But not everything. But and this is something I say constantly. Not everything is for everybody.
Yes.
Period.
Yes, exactly. You know? That's very wise. And I think one of the issues in our nation today is, in fact, because of the richness and diversity of our nation, there is no way to come up with rules that everyone consents to.
Right.
Somebody.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Somebody is always being forced to yield. Some group is always losing. And so one of the possibilities is, what if, in fact, we could have different groups? This morning, I was reading an article by Neil Howe, who is one of the authors of The Fourth Turning, a seminal work on the Great Wheel generational theory. I read his first book back in the early 90s, and he had an article this morning talking about succession. In other words, secession. In other words, what if the United States split?
Mm-hmm. And I wondered about that.
You know, that is in fact a way to say, okay, if different majorities, if different groups of people want to live in different ways, let them. Rather than trying to come up with one answer that fits everyone in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I talk about in The Great Wheel as a pagan value is our valuing of plurality. That we as pagans understand that different people, somebody worships Mercury, somebody else worships Inanna. That's cool. Somebody
yeah.
else worships a completely different goddess from a completely different culture. Great. Somebody else just kind of generally thinks that maybe the gods exist. Okay, that's cool too. We
yep.
we believe that it's okay to have different paths and different appropriate for different people. So when you think about if you try to make a rule that applies to every person in the United States, no matter what that rule is, a lot of people are going to be very unhappy with it.
Hmm. But isn't that the nature of the peaceful transfer of power, that sometimes you're in power and sometimes somebody else is in power?
It is. But there's a point where some people are never getting any power, right? Some people
True.
Are
yep.
always to injustice. And,
right.
you know, how do you deal with the oppression of the majority? If, as a queer mm. person, you know, I grew up when 70% of people disapprove of me. Does that mean I don't have any rights? Because 70%
no, of
disapprove
not.
Of me? And
that's,
so...
But that's kind of my point about it. That's why it's so important for power to be shared or distributed correctly. Maybe the whole system is the problem, and we need to build a new system where everyone really has a seat at the table. You know, the great Ann Richards said, if you're not at the table, you're probably on the menu. And I was a huge fan of hers, Governor Ann Richards from Texas. And,
yeah,
you know, she was a brilliant woman. And but the fact of the matter is that too many people are not at the table. And how do we make power and equity? How do we get to power equity is my question. You know, is it that we all have to split into groups, or is just the group needing a whole new approach?
I think, and this is just, this is my opinion, so please feel free to disagree. I think we have reached the point where we are so diverse that the only way to have any group rules is to perpetually oppress somebody.
Mm.
Because
mm.
there, it's just too many people. It's like, let's say you're going to take your three best friends out to lunch, back in the day when we did that, right? You're going to take your three
yeah.
best friends out to lunch. You could probably pick a place, right? That's not too difficult.
Yeah.
But let's say you are planning a lunch for 40 people, most of whom you've never met, who are from a complete variety of walks of life, dietary restrictions, religious restrictions, physical necessities, and you need to plan a lunch menu for them.
Okay. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a lot.
I had an event actually in Charlotte once, and I was told that what I had to do with this lunch menu was that it had to be accessible to vegetarians, vegans, be kosher, halal, gluten-free, and involve all locally sourced organic materials.
Oh, shit. I don't know how you would do that. Wow.
Well,
okay.
You couldn't. I mean, that was simply the answer is you can't.
Yeah.
The only thing you can serve is a leaf of lettuce at that point, because there is no meal that you can produce that will be tasty and that will fulfill every dietary requirement. And so the only way to fulfill every dietary requirement is to let different people eat different things.
Right.
If you can have 6 menu options, then you can feed this crowd. But you can't feed them all the same menu option.
True.
If you have one option that's kosher and one option that's vegan and one option that's gluten-free and one, you know, then you can cover it. And people can choose which option they want.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is the key. People get to choose which option they want. Rather than everyone has to eat the gluten-free oatmeal, which is the only option that fits all the requirements.
Yeah, maybe not the tastiest option, but something everyone could digest. I mean, I understand
what you're saying. I'm being facetious there, but, you know, you see what I mean.
But I get it. No, of course. And so my question is this a situation where, you know, like I've always looked very fondly on the multiple party system in Great Britain, you know, House of Commons, you have the Democrats, Liberal Democrats, the Conservative Democrats. I mean, you have something for everybody. And to me, that seems like a parliamentary system is the most ideal way to go. More and more people are able to have a seat at that table.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we should be moving to?
I think the parliamentary system does provide more options, but, and because, you know, generally having a majority requires building a coalition, but they're still going to create a coherent policy. And, you know, the United States is bigger and more populous than the entire European Union.
True.
You know, when you talk North Carolina, it by itself has more population than the 8th largest country in Europe. It is bigger than Ireland, than Spain, than Switzerland. I mean, you know, you look at the population of North Carolina has about the same population as Poland.
Wow.
And North
That's
Carolina
amazing.
Is not the largest state. California is by itself is bigger than Germany.
I never consider that, though. I never think about that. And, yes, it's true. I mean, but that would mean we are so far behind it, you know. I mean, when you have so many more people, there should be that many more options than just two parties. And listen, it's not that I've had this argument up, down, and sideways. Because of the way our system works, when you get down to election day, you only do have two choices. And, you know, third-party voters who I've, you know, had very public issues with, I've said, you know, it's great that you want a viable third party. I would love multiple parties. But if you're not actively working on it between elections, because a lot of the time, the only time we hear from some of these folks is when it's a presidential season, you know, and I understand wanting more options, but they have to be somewhat viable. You can't just bring attention to it in the 11th hour.
Mm-hmm.
Agree?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. If there's going to be another party, it needs to be, it needs to have some teeth, not just, Now,
one thing we may see
is a split in the Republican Party. I think that is one possible outcome of this crisis, that the Republican Party does split, and that does create a viable third party with a large constituency.
You mean like the Tea Party?
No, I mean like, say, the party of Trump and the party of Mitt Romney.
Ah, decency. Yes, I remember Mitt Romney. But they seem to go so hard. Every time there's a split in any party, really, it seems to go hardcore radical to a point where even folks who are a regular, you know, a part of the already existing party are like, you guys are just way too far. But shouldn't there still be a seat at the table for people that maybe you and I consider to be going too far? Or, I mean, because everything you have always said to me about, you know, what's the word? We were just talking about it. When you don't let freedom of speech, in a manner of speaking, or when you stop people from what's the word when you stop people from saying what they're feeling? Censorship. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Censorship. I'm so concerned about censorship because of the example you gave me the first conversation we had, that it stayed with me. So I'm always concerned about any kind of censorship being a concern. You know, how far is too far?
Well, that's a good question, and I think that's something that everyone is wrestling with right now, especially in the issue of social media. You know, at what point are people freely expressing themselves, and at what point are they harming others? And,
right.
You know, that is one of the thorny issues that there's not an easy answer to. And, you know, I just gave the example of Congressman Dyes and his good-intentioned attempt to end hate speech, which turned out to be so horrible. You know, it's a very thorny question. How far is too far?
There's no answer. That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's no real concrete answer, because no matter what happens, someone is going to have, somewhere is going to have a negative feeling about something you say, no matter what it's about or whom it's to. So, you know, when I was a kid, we always erred on the side of, you have to let everybody speak whether you like it or not, whether it's ugly or not, because the minute you tell somebody you can't say that, you have already put limitations on what you yourself can say. You've already thrown that block up for yourself and anybody you care about, or people you don't care about. You've already instituted a policy that you can't live by. So my feeling is that as ugly as things get, and as hateful as things get, you really are walking a tightrope when you consider something hate speech, because your hate speech to somebody else is just an opinion. I think, however, if you incite someone to cause violence, I think that is a definite line. Do you think that's a definite line?
I agree. And so I think there is a difference between, you know, expressing a general opinion as, you know, even if that opinion is awful, if I say, I'm being hypothetical, I'm not saying this for real, women are smarter than men, that is not hate speech. Now, if I say, Joe Smith, who lives at 126 Lawn Drive, is a dumbass, that may be hate speech. That is swatting someone, that is outing somebody, that is organizing people to go over to Joe Smith's house, that's different. That is causing harm to Joe Smith. And so I think one of the things when we're trying to figure out a line is, what's a general opinion and what is inciting harm on a person.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But in terms of In terms of the great wheel, there tends to be a cycle about speech. You know, in late autumn and in early winter, where we've been since the 1990s, there tends to be maximum freedom of speech. Everything goes, right? It's a big internet jungle and anybody can say anything. And to get kicked off a platform, you pretty much have to kill your dog on television, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the reaction to that is tightening things because it goes too far. It goes way too far. And now we're in the part where it's just flipped. Public opinion has just flipped. We need to tighten it. We need to restrict it. We need to restrain it because it has gone so far and so wrong. And so that's where we will be through the end of winter and spring. And then in summer, around 2040, a younger generation coming up will say, I don't understand why saying these things is forbidden. I'm going to say all the forbidden things. And it will swing the other way. And so just like with, you know, we see this pattern with parenting, right? One generation is underparented. And so they're helicopter parents. And then their kids are like, oh, my God, let me breathe. Let children breathe. Their free spirit should not be inhibited. And so they let their kids run wild. And then you switch back and forth and back and forth. And that's what fuels the cycle. The cycle is not woo. It's not woo, woo, woo. It's not the you know, this is because of the gods. This is because of how people act and react. If you were very strictly raised, you're probably less strict with your kids. If your kids were very permissively raised, they're probably very strict. And we go back and forth and back and forth.
It's really amazing. And, you know, I love this book. I love both books. But the thing I love, and I want to encourage folks to buy both of these books, because you will see the pattern, how beautifully predictive it is, and it will give you guidance into the future. I'm sorry, I just got to brag on you a little bit here. And as far as the Great Wheel Winter goes, it carries you through these upcoming difficult times. And what Joe has done with rituals and ways to focus on getting through these storms and tribulations is really wonderful. So if you are interested in this amazing set of books, I got to encourage you to get them. They are fantastic.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. My goal was
it's important
to create kind of a map because, you know, a couple of years ago in 2017, 2018, I saw so many people panicking as they realized, oh, my God, there is tower time. And I wanted to write this to say there is tower time and it is a season. Just like winter is a season. You know, we know it's coming. We know it's going to be tough, but it is a season. It is a natural part of the world. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't worry. It doesn't mean we shouldn't take it seriously. But it does mean that we should understand that it's part of the context of the wheel, the great wheel, not as the same way that winter is part of the wheel of the year. You know, our ancient ancestors watched the sun rise later every day and set earlier every day and wondered, what if the sun never comes back? But of course they knew that it does this every year. And it's scary and it's cold and it does it every year. And then we prepare for winter and it comes, but also we know that spring will follow it.
Ha ha ha. Thank you so much for saying that. This hour has really, I mean, I was at the edge and you pulled me back, and I so appreciate you for doing that.
because spring will come.
It will come. It will be okay. No matter what the turnout is, it's going to be okay. And I think that is the greatest message that anybody can get today. No matter what, it's going to be all right. There's a road through. There are rituals to do. There are plans. I'm telling you, The Great Wheel and The Great Wheel Winter, I can't recommend them highly enough. Great books. If you're stressed, if things don't go the way we hope they go, and even if they do, there's still things to come that we need to be prepared for no matter what happens tonight or over the next week or month. Because it may not be tonight.
We are not out of the woods. You know, if
we
get through this storm, this is getting through a storm at Imbolc, right? You have an ice storm at Imbolc or a snowstorm at Imbolc. Winter's not over.
It's not over.
But at the same time, you can look ahead and you can say, it's not going to be like this in April.
There you go.
It's going to be okay. We can't say on Imbolc, are there 3 more weeks of bad weather? Are there 4 more weeks? Are there 5 or 6 more weeks? We can't know that. But what we can know is that spring will come.
We're going to be all right. We're going to make it through.
We are going to make it through. We're going to make it through.
We're going to make it through, seriously. So keep heart. It's going to be okay. So I've got to ask you before I let you go, because we're only down to like a minute and a half. What are your predictions for tonight?
I think that Biden will win. I think that his margins will be fairly large, but I think that there are states that will not accept the situation. I think there is going to be down to the Electoral College. I think December 21st is the critical date.
Wow. Write it down. December 21st is the critical date. Writing it down now. Amazing. Joe Graham, I think you're amazing. I really appreciate
you
coming
you.
On and putting my brain back together. Absolutely. I can't wait until we can talk about your next book, too. Thank you again so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, great. I will be coming back to speak with you in a couple of minutes. All right.
Okay.
Bye. All right, everybody, I will be back with Star Bustamante for the 4:15 on Thursday, and Taliesin on Friday, and Courtney Weber on Saturday, and I think I have a Sunday show, but I don't remember. But anyway, okay, if you haven't voted, vote, and I will talk to you on the other side of all of this. Have a great afternoon. Bye, everybody.